It's time for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Doug is a certified financial planner, providing you with a personal financial hotline to answer your questions about tax planning, investments, retirement planning, estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF's phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Call toll-free 1-800-662-7979. And for mobile phones, it's star 680. And now, Doug and Linda Lewis and Money Matters.
Hello there, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment and financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years,
we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will? What's a living will? And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the Certified Financial Planner.
It's the Certified Financial Planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the Certified Financial Planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it, and if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments, home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds? Bond mutual funds, equipment leasing partnerships, REITs, CDs, gold, annuities.
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out of towners, call us toll free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Juanita? This is Doug Lewis. How can I help you?
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Juanita.
First, let me tell you, we really enjoy your show. You've helped us out before, and we really appreciate it. But
okay, that makes me feel real good.
Oh, I'm so glad it does. You've even sent us some information that we've really appreciated. But aside from that, I'm a Canadian citizen, and I recently heard that my family is all in Canada, and I recently heard that when my mother dies, and her estate is divided, or whatever they do, that I will be penalized and have to pay some extraordinary tax that my brothers in Canada would not have to pay. And I'd like to look into it, but I'm really at a loss for where to start.
Your mother hasn't died yet?
No.
You know about the size of the estate at all, Juanita?
Well, not really. I really don't have any specifics. It'd be more than half a million, but not a million.
All right, more than half a million, and that'll be divided three ways?
About half. I'd say, good half.
It's a funny question you're asking me, Juanita, because usually I'm asked the other side of the question, which I thought you were going to ask me, which is what about you? Because you're in a unique situation. Your husband, American citizen?
Yes.
Yeah, you are in a unique citizen at the time that you die.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. There is a special law that hits you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the one I thought you were going to ask me, and I was all geared up to give you the answer.
Oh, well, okay, that'll be part
But the other one I'm going to have to research. If you call me at the office, I'll see what I can do about that one.
Our number in Raleigh is 872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Okay.
If it's taxable, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, now there are what do they call those laws that are equal between countries. For example, you can't, live in Germany and then come over to the United States and inherit money back and forth and not pay on one side or the other.
Right. We pay on one side, but,
Right. I think that's all, but I will be happy to put you in touch with somebody or see if I can do the research myself to check and see if there's a second hit. I didn't think there was a second hit. For you as an American, as long as the estate paid the taxes up there.
Right, and I'm not an American. I'm a Canadian citizen.
Right, I cannot see why, but I can look up that one for you.
So what happens if I die?
But now if you die, you got a big problem.
Really?
Yeah, this is the deal. There is something called the unlimited marital deduction. Are you familiar with that?
Never heard of it.
You can leave to a spouse an unlimited amount. A million, 2 million, 10 million, etc. And there is no tax whatsoever when you leave to your spouse. That's called the unlimited marital deduction.
Okay.
But the problem is that every American citizen has a tax credit against their estate. Well, this unlimited marital deduction, this unified credit is not allowed for non-U.S. spouses. But there is a special ruling which has to do with setting up a qualified trust for non-U.S. spouses.
Uh-huh.
And that's a special qualified trust, which I recently have gone through doing a little research on and have recommended because I have a client who is married to Where are they from, Linda? Where is she from?
Australia.
Australia, right. Right, and that's where I came across it. If you would like to go ahead, when you call in at the office, I'll see if I can get that those rules and regulations to you. And what you need to do in your will, you see, and in your husband's will, is you need to have this trust identified.
So we need to go in and have our will changed or whatever, updated or whatever?
Yes, yes. You never can tell. For example, let's say your mom dies and leaves those assets to you, and then you leave, and then all of a sudden you do have a problem at your death. You see what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So you want to be aware of that trust and of that provision for the non-U.S. spouses. And if you call up the office, I will find out if there's anything I can give you that tells you what happens to a Canadian estate's inheritance that's received by a Canadian married to a U.S. citizen.
You know, it's just sort of funny when you go into the lawyer's office and you sit down and you discuss all this. They never tell you anything, you know.
Yeah.
They don't ever mention the danger of an I love you will, you know.
Yeah, it's really bad. You want to have some fun sometime, get a book called, what's that book I've been reading, Linda, that I like so much?
Loving Trust.
Loving Trusts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't recommend it as a thing to do yourself, but it's a real eye-opener, and it's about people using certain trust and doing it themselves and protecting themselves from lawyers who really don't know what they're doing and why they don't advise clients certain ways. And, you know, lawyers sometimes, and I have to say, I was in law school myself one day, and I deal with a lot of attorneys, but many attorneys are guilty of what they don't know they cover up by simply trying to dazzle you with their brilliance.
Well, you know, it's like when you go to the doctor's office, you just have to remember that you're in charge of your body, and you are the last say with your body, and if you just can't leave your body in the hands of anybody else explicitly, and it looks like you just can't leave your money in the hands of anybody else explicitly either. You've got to
the best way to work is work through a financial planner and let him choose the attorney, because that way the planner talks to you one-on-one as I do, gets your goals, brings all these things to your attention, then he discusses with the attorney what the attorney should be doing, and together you know it works out the way you want.
The number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Doug, and Linda, too, for your help.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, Lynn, what's new in the area of investment planning?
Well, Doug, you know, many of our listeners that have called in want to know, how do I know which investments to choose?
Good question, Lynn. Real good question. You know, a certified financial planner can first help you determine your current financial situation and your personal goals. What do you want your investments to achieve, for example? Are you investing for retirement or college education? Or do you want to raise capital to start a business?
And people generally are concerned about their age, their net worth, what's your tax bracket, and what goals will determine what types of investments you should be in, right, Doug?
Yeah, those goals in mind help your financial planner help you to prepare an investment policy statement, which is really crucial.
Well, Doug, what exactly is an investment policy statement?
An investment policy statement, Lynn, is your investment roadmap. It keeps you steady through good times and bad. It can help you quickly eliminate investment ideas that just don't fit, saving both time and costly mistakes. And it can also provide you with realistic expectations and a way to monitor the actual performance of your investments. Now, that policy statement should outline a number of things in it.
And some of those include your investment goals, right, Doug? And the minimum level of return that you need so that you can achieve those goals.
Those are important to be in the policy statement, along with what types of investments you will and will not include, and what portion of the total portfolio each investment will comprise.
And also how long the assets will be in the portfolio and the anticipated inflation rate as well as the tax bracket assumptions, right?
Once the investment policy is in place, then it's time, and only then is it time, to construct an investment portfolio, Lynn.
Well, Doug, what exactly is an investment portfolio?
You know, it's a funny thing, Lynn, that you would ask that question, because you'd think everybody knows what an investment portfolio is, but I would say 80% of the people that I meet don't know what an investment portfolio is. And what it really is the combination of more than one investment asset, such as stocks or bonds, cash, real estate, precious metals, international investments.
And how you and your financial planner construct this portfolio is important, because different types of investments do better in different economic conditions. And Doug, what would you say about diversifying?
Well, by diversifying your investments in a portfolio, you are more likely to reduce the volatility, which is a fancy word for risk, and also increase your potential return.
Well, Doug, what about percentages?
What kind of percentages? Percentages of return? That's hard to predict, Lynn. You can't do that. You can only look backwards. You can look backwards and see what percentage returns have happened over time in different categories. But research does indicate that over 90% of a portfolio's performance is attributable not to the percentage returns, but to the selection and balancing of the different asset classes.
I've read that a mere 5% is attributable to the selection of specific funds, but only 1% to luck.
Yeah, 5% is virtually nothing. Most of the time, what makes a portfolio work or not work is not the hot investment, but it's the way that you've balanced it. And that's where the Certified Financial Planner helps you design this portfolio with the correct asset classes for you.
Doug, you know, some people have raised the question, why don't I just select today's hottest investments? What do you think about this?
Well, we hear it all the time, Lynn. Today's hottest investments, however, are oftentimes tomorrow's coldest turkeys. You know, you got to avoid the fads and the fancies. Invest for the long term, because too often people randomly pick out investments as if they're pieces of a puzzle. They'll choose a hot mutual fund they read about in a personal finance magazine, or buy a piece of real estate that some cousin recommended.
How many times I have heard that story over and over again, and the problem is that people don't know where the pieces go because they don't have their whole investment picture in front of them. And quite possibly the pieces belong to different puzzles, so therefore they're inappropriate for a person's portfolio, correct?
Yeah, individual investments should reflect the guidelines established in the policy statement. Now, if you've had a financial plan produced, it should have a policy statement in it.
Our number in Raleigh is 872-7000. That's USA 7000.
But in either case, the policy statement should reflect, or the investments in the portfolio should reflect what's in the policy statement.
Now, what about if you were establishing a conservative portfolio?
Well, let's say that you are a conservative individual. You might have something like 60% in bond funds, 20% in stock funds, and maybe as much as 20% in cash. And a more aggressive portfolio might have 70% in stock funds, 20% in bond funds, and maybe 5% cash with 5% in real estate.
Well, Doug, other listeners wonder, should I buy individual stocks or bonds or mutual funds? And a lot of people have questions about what should I be in, particularly if they've been in CDs or if they've inherited money and they want to know, what should I do with this money?
It really depends upon a lot of factors, but one of them is your risk tolerance, and another is the amount of money you have available to invest. And, of course, the time and the interest you and your advisor have to study, to monitor your investments, and consider the advantages and disadvantages of each depending on your own needs and circumstances.
Well, Doug, some of our listeners also want to know, should I consider investing overseas?
Foreign stocks and foreign bonds are more volatile, but they oftentimes perform better when the U.S. market performs poorly, and thus you can find a way to reduce the overall risk of your portfolio.
You know, Doug, I've read that with many international mutual funds available, it's relatively easy to purchase a part of the rest of the world if you and your advisor find such an investment appropriate.
Yeah, that's a given, Lynn. The point is that the capitalization around the world, the investment opportunities around the world are out there far and far beyond the United States. And if you're going to go ahead and participate in wealth accumulation, you need to expose yourself to international investing. It's a good way to balance a portfolio on the one hand, because world markets don't move in perfect harmony. As one market goes up, another goes down, and so forth. And there are financial planners that are saying, with the globalization and the global village that we're moving into, you should have as much as 60% of your portfolio with some sort of foreign or worldwide exposure.
People also have questions about real estate and gold and oil and gas. What do you think about those?
Well, those are asset classes, Lynn, and they have a place. Some of them have a place in some investment portfolios. But on the other hand, not all portfolios should have all classes. Hard assets like real estate and oil and gas, we put in different portfolios. Precious metals, I don't have a great love for. Unlike indirect investments like stocks and bonds, many of these other types, however, can can be purchased through direct participation like limited partnerships. And as a result, they offer unique advantages and disadvantages, considering things like liquidity and taxes. Some of these can give big tax advantages.
What's the best way to go about investing?
Well, there's no one preferred way, but a good way is dollar cost averaging if you've got money coming in over a regular basis. Actually, there's a wonderful book that I like, Linda, called The Wealthy Barber, and it makes a strong case for accumulating wealth on a regular basis, month by month by month, if that's the way your money comes to you. Then there are other ways to consider with regard to lump sums and trust and so forth. But in the dollar cost averaging methodology, what you're doing there is you're trying to keep yourself from timing the market and letting time, not timing, do the work for you. Then by diversifying and investing regularly, you're able to more likely earn a reasonable return, since some investment markets over time rise in value and others go down in value, but most of them will rise in value.
Now, a very serious question here. How does one avoid investment scams?
You know, Linda, it's a sad thing, but if you've been in this business as long as I have, you've seen the most amazing number of scams out there, and you're amazed at the greater fool theory. You know what the greater fool theory is?
No.
There's always a greater fool. There's always a greater fool. I mean, it's unbelievable. The wise people that I've spoken to, the wealthy people who have swallowed hook, line, and sinker.
They buy those, the pitch on the buying coins.
Coins and gold. And what was that offshore trust that guy called you about? You remember that one?
Yeah.
How to cheat the United States out of all their taxes because by a constitutional
trust.
Wasn't that what it was called? The constitutional trust and everything.
Man.
And then the cellular telephone deals and one after the other. One investment rule is, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And the second rule is, never invest dollars as a result of a telephone pitch. The majority of investment scams are boiler room telephone operations. You should always demand a detailed prospectus and other financial offering materials before making any decision. You should refuse any buy now sales pitches, and you should be working with a financial advisor, in my opinion.
What are some common investment mistakes that people make, Doug? Let's review those very quickly.
Well, mistakes, I guess the biggest mistake is they don't start soon enough. You know, an investment of $100 a month when you're 25 years old, if it grows at 8% and you reinvest everything, is going to be over a third of $1 million by retirement age. The second mistake I guess people make is they don't develop any plan, any investment plan.
And they don't diversify their investments.
Big problem. You remember that
putting
one?
Putting all your eggs in one basket?
I would tell you, as soon as somebody finds something they like, everything goes in. Everything goes in. Like the fellow that came to see you recently with $2 million, that one stock.
Right. And people often have unrealistic expectations.
Unrealistic expectations. Big problem. To earn higher returns, you usually have to take more risk. Lower risk usually means a lower return.
And most people don't invest for the long term, and basically what happens, you can reduce the risk of more volatile investments such as stocks, correct?
If you do invest for the long term, that's exactly right. And another mistake people make is they don't take the responsibility for their own investments. They don't educate themselves about their investments, and they fail to keep a close eye on their investments. And
I get more people that call me and say, well, I've got this retirement plan, but I'm not sure what it is or what's in it.
If your financial planner or your investment advisor isn't willing to explain the fundamentals of investing and the advantages and disadvantages of a specific investment you're considering, you should not work with that advisor.
And many people fail to take full advantage of their 401k plans, their IRAs, or any other tax advantage saving plans.
Those are the primary mistakes people make, Lynn.
If you have any further questions or if we can be of any further assistance, you can call our office at 872-7000 in the Raleigh area, and we'll be happy to do what we can to assist you. You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis, and if you've got a question, we'd love to hear about it. Call us at 680-WPTF at 860-9783. If you're out of town, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you're in your car, star 680. And I believe we have another caller.
Alan, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
My mother is 74, and she has a majority of her investments now in certificates of deposit at different banks.
Right.
She does have some tax-free bonds and a few what I would call mutual funds in utility.
Right.
What kind of investments should she be making now, considering her age?
She's 74.
74.
How much does she have in CDs?
Probably $400,000.
$400,000 in CDs, and how much in her tax-free bonds?
Probably in all of her other investments, around $200,000 more.
Do you know what her living expenses are?
She lives well within her means and with a little Social Security she gets.
What's her health like?
Excellent.
She's a widow, Alan?
Yes, she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, assuming, you know, God forbid she died tomorrow, then this might be fine. However, if she's still in good health, then she's really hurting her heirs. By the way, what about her home?
It's paid for.
How much is it worth?
Probably $80,000 to $100,000.
Well, one thing that jumps out right off the bat, knowing that she's a widow, if she's got $400 in CDs and $200 in munis and $100,000, that's $700,000. And if there's going to be any growth, even if there's only about a 3%, you know, when you're talking about those munis and utility funds and CDs, they're not real exciting. But even if that was the case with only 3%, at 15 years, she'd have over $1 million. So from the investment side, what I would do is I would have her in a diversified portfolio. I'd take the 4 and 2, the $600,000, and maybe break it into $50,000 unit sizes. So if you got $600,000 and you divide it by your $50,000 units, then she'd have 12 investment units, and I would spread it across 12 different mutual funds, quite frankly. And in each of those cases, I would go according to the past track record of the managers. She might be in some growth and income funds. She might be in some corporate bond funds. She could have a couple of government bond funds. She could have a large cap international fund, because she's able to live off of whatever portfolio she's in. So really what we're designing here is a portfolio that's going to let the estate grow the best for her heirs. You see what I'm saying?
I understand.
The phone number at the office is 919-872-7000.
But then I would also do the estate plan simultaneously. And you could do that one of a couple of ways, but one way that comes to mind would be using the Section 664 trust. She has the very strong possibility of leaving an estate well over $1 million if she lives a little while. And so you could have all of this growth in the Section 664 trust with yourself. And how many other heirs are there besides yourself?
A total of four.
Well, you could have four beneficiaries, income beneficiaries from the trust, so that the trust would then pay out for the lifetime of those four.
She's of the age that grew up during the Depression.
Right.
How do you get them to understand that the money in the CDs is a losing proposition to her just because of inflation?
Well,
and out of into something maybe a little more risky, but still a very safe investment.
Well, it's not a matter of risky or safe. It's a matter of her living expenses being met. How much do you think she needs to live on?
She's living on about $15,000 a year.
$15,000 divided by $600,000 is 2%, 2.5%. Well, we could increase her income to $30,000 a year without having any real risk, in my opinion, of depleting principal. Most senior citizens need to have education from an independent, certified financial planner, someone who is impartial, not trying to sell them something, but someone who can educate, analyze, and decide what's best, and help them understand what's best. Very often when they see that their estate is going to be paying a couple $100,000 in taxes, that really starts to bother them. So it's an educational process. If she's open for education, then you should set up a meeting with a certified financial planner and let her go through a session of education.
We find this is a typical situation.
We have a lot of
widows that, you know, their husbands accumulated, you know, over their lifetime, or maybe they both were, you know, had income, and or they inherited assets that have appreciated, and They don't always need all the income, but you want to, certainly, as Doug said, you want to make sure you're meeting her need, but also you want to look to the future, right, Doug?
Yeah, but I think Alan's question is, how do you explain that to her? He understands it very well. And the answer is still, you've got to get her in front of a planner. Usually the child cannot explain that to the mom and dad.
Right.
That's been our experience. The children that have brought them to us, usually it's a very different environment then, because the planner is able to speak directly, you know, with the parent.
So if you'd like to call the office, Alan, our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. And thank you so much for calling.
All right, thank you.
Take care now. All right, you're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis, and we're taking your calls at WPTF, 680 WPTF, at 860-9783, and out-of-towners, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979, and if you're in your car, it's star 680. Doug, as far as giving, what does a charitable trust do?
Well, I think the best way to understand how the trust works to not share your wealth as much as enhance the total wealth position, how you can help yourself, your community, and your family. And you don't have to be a Ted Turner to really be able to do some good, even helping yourself do good. And you have to think of the trust in the form of six players. I like to call them players. There are six players in a charitable trust scenario.
Okay.
The first player is the donor.
Right.
Now, the donor is the person who sets up the trust, and he gives something into the trust. If it's a business owner, he might give his stock into the trust. If it's a person who has a stock portfolio, it might be he.
It might be someone who inherited a farm.
Right.
But is not going to do farming.
Exactly. But the donor is the one who sets up the trust, and then he creates this trust, and he names a trustee, and he gives something from himself to the trustee. So the trustee is a very important player. I like to have the trust set up so the client is his own trustee.
Set up a trust where the client is his own trustee.
Right.
A self-trusted trust.
Well, where he identifies himself as the donor, but also himself as the trustee. Then he gives from himself to himself, so to speak. Now, the third player after the trustee is called the income beneficiary. That's the person that the trustee pays.
All right, the income beneficiary.
And the fourth player is the charitable or the nonprofit beneficiary. And that's the person or the party that or the nonprofit that's going to get what's left after everybody dies and is gone.
Is that what's known as the remainderman?
Yes, they get the remainder of what's in the trust after the trust is over. And usually I like to run them after both people have passed away, the husband and the wife. Now, the income beneficiary can also be the same person as the donor and as the trustee. But we have to be very careful when we do it this way, because we want to make sure that there is no self-dealing. But if you do it this way, the trustee again then gets to sell everything he gave that the donor gave to the trust and pay no capital gains tax, and then reinvest the money in mutual funds and other normal investments. So it can be very powerful if you get the parties straightened out.
And what about the administrator?
The administrator is an important role. The administrator is the party that files the tax returns and keeps track to show the IRS that there's no hanky-panky. The sixth layer is the investment advisor.
Exactly.
That's the one that's going to invest all the money after you've sold everything. You want both the administrator and the investment advisor to be under employment by the trustee.
To any of our listeners, if you have a question or if you would like to receive our introductory packet of information, I'll be happy to send it to you. Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That is USA 7000. Get a notebook and start jotting down some of those questions and work with a financial planner. And I believe we have another caller.
Well, George, how can I help you? This is Doug Lewis.
Doug, I have a question about mutual funds. What advantage, if any, is there to be had in buying a load mutual fund? And if there's no advantage, why are there so many of them?
The advantage to buying a no-load fund?
A load fund.
Oh, that's real simple. That's like saying, what's the advantage of going ahead and getting a real estate broker to sell my house for me when I can sell it myself? I thought you were going to ask the other question, what's the advantage of a no-load fund?
And well, there is either way. I'd like to know the advantages going either way.
All right. Well, first of all, there is no real advantage of buying a no-load fund or a load fund. There is no real difference between them. That's not the way you look at the issue. What you really want to know is what's the performance and how has the fund with its managers done to make money over a length of time? And that's all you do. You just go ahead and you find if a particular set of managers can make more money for you than another set of managers, then go with that manager and don't worry about if you had to go ahead and, you know, pay a few dollars to find a broker or a planner to put you into that fund. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Depends how long the money's going to be there too. If you're going to pay a 5% load on a fund and plan to keep your money there only 3 years, yeah, then that's wrong. On the other hand, if you're looking for but you shouldn't be in the mutual funds if you could be doing that anyway, because mutual funds are for long-term investing, at least 5 years. And over a 5-year period, you'll find that 5% walks down to about 0.5% or 1%, and then over a 10-year period, it becomes an infinitesimal amount. The other thing is, most no-load funds have high fees inside the fund.
Yeah, right, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, nobody works for free.
So really, you've got to just forget about that and make the decision on what your needs are and the quality of the fund.
That's right. Look at the managers. Remember, a mutual fund is a group of men's minds who are going into the pit for you on Wall Street, and they're buying and selling stocks, and you're looking at their ability to select and their long-term performance record. Or if it's a bond fund, it's a group of men who are making their decisions on what bonds to buy and what bonds to sell and so forth. That's the whole key to this thing. They never see the load. That doesn't go to them. That goes to the broker or the planner, whoever it is that's putting the money with them.
Do you make recommendations to your clients on which funds to go into?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do. I'd rather not on the air I don't like to step on anybody's feet.
Right.
But yeah, I track as many of the funds that I feel are good, and I guess every planner has their own special ones that they feel comfortable that have done well over a 5 or 10 or 20 year period or whatever.
And if there's anything we can do to help you with that, you can call our office here in Raleigh at 872-7000, and we'll see what we can do to help you.
Well, be in touch then.
All right. Thank you for calling, George.
Well, Doug, what's new in the world of tax planning?
The frequent question I hear from clients is, what can I do to reduce my taxes now? Your options of tax reduction methods are tax strategies and tax shelter investments. First, tax strategies. Strategy number one, accelerate deductions by making sure all deductible expenses, including charitable contributions, are made before December 31. Contributions placed on credit can be deducted this year, even though your credit card bill isn't paid until next year. Strategy 2. Consider CRUTs and CRATs, charitable remainder trusts, into which you can give appreciated assets like stock or real estate, save capital gains tax, allow a charitable deduction for the value of the gift, and give a lifetime income back to you from the trust. Strategy number 3. Estimate state income tax. State taxes paid before December 31 may be used as a federal tax deduction. Don't forget this one. Strategy 4. Capture mutual fund losses. If your mutual fund has lost money on paper, switch to a money market fund and buy back 31 days later. The dollar value of your mutual fund will remain the same, but you'll have captured tax losses. Strategy 5. Contribute to a retirement account. If you qualify for an IRA deduction, contribute and take it. Strategy number 6, deduct mortgage interest. So yes, there are tax strategies available to you. But what about tax shelter investments? You have 4 choices. First, you can invest in 3 types of real estate investments. These investments are apartments for the poor or elderly, historic buildings in need of preservation, and duplexes in rural communities. The 4th investment type is an oil and gas drilling partnership. Risks are involved in different types of drilling programs, but rewards can be great. Always work with a reputable advisor. Well, if tax relief is your money matter, I hope my comments today have helped. Remember, seek competent financial advice, and if you have any financial questions, just give me a call at 872-7000. That's 872-7000. And remember, your financial future is at stake.
Let's take another caller.
Hi, Jeanette. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
Hi. We're in our middle 50s, and we're about to make an appointment to either have a living trust or a will, and I don't know the difference between them. What would be the best for us?
Now, you say that you're getting ready to have a meeting with the financial planner?
Well, no, with the lawyer. We really need to have something set up because our adult kids really don't know what we have, and we just need to have the difference between a living trust and a will.
Right. I can help you understand a little bit, but my first advice is don't meet with the attorney first. Meet with a certified financial planner that will educate you on how it ties together everything that you've got, and then go to the attorney next. It will cost you much less that way.
Is that right?
Yes, because so many times I see clients coming to me with unfunded living trust, and I ask them, why'd you do it? And they say, well, my attorney said I should do it. I say, well, wonderful. You realize you've got a toothless dog here. You created a trust, but it's not going to do a single bit of good for you, because the benefits that you're expecting to get from it won't happen unless it's been funded. Well, the attorney never told me about funding them, and the attorney generally doesn't do the funding and so forth. So I would recommend that you meet with a fee-based certified financial planner. That's someone who you're going to pay a fee for. He's not going to try and sell you anything, but he will go ahead and look at your assets. There are many cases that, where you don't need a living trust and many cases that you do. There are many attorneys that don't like living trust because it cheats them out of fees later on. That's the view of some attorneys. And there are many who feel that it's the best thing there is.
Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Now, to give you some quick little down and dirty pieces of information so that I haven't failed to answer your question, a living trust is generally revocable, which means that you can change your mind anytime between now and the time you die. It has two sections to it generally. One section deals with the things that you want to happen during your lifetime. Those are called the living provisions. And then you have the testamentary provisions, or what you want to do happen at your death. And that's the same thing as a will. So it's got two provisions in there. Obviously, a will has nothing to do with your during your lifetime. But a living trust has two parts. It functions both during your lifetime and at your death. The IRS tells you that the revocable living trust has no taxable benefit to you whatsoever because you can change your mind. But the reason people very often want a revocable living trust is that it avoids the cost of probate at death, because if you put everything you own in the name of this revocable living trust while you're alive, then at the time you die, you personally didn't own anything. This trust owned everything, and so there's nothing to go through probate, and all of the fees that you would generally pay an attorney to probate your estate are avoided. That's one reason people like revocable living trust. Another reason people like revocable living trust is that at death, you know how there's very often a 9-month delay to go through the probate process?
Right.
Well, there's no delay. Anything that's in the trust can be distributed immediately according to the provisions in the trust. A third reason people like revocable living trust are confidentiality. At the time that you die, only the stuff that you own personally, in other words, only things that are not owned by this trust, are in the newspaper or available for public disclosure. Trust assets are never available to the public knowledge. Another reason that people like revocable living trust, probably one of the most important reasons that I recommend them for my senior citizens, is in the sake of incapacitation. If you don't die, but you get disabled, if you get paralyzed, you don't have to use a power of attorney a person doesn't have to have a power of attorney to continue to administer your assets, to take things from your investments, to pay your medical bills and so forth. Those are the reasons people want a revocable living trust. The differences between a revocable living trust and a will are basically the lifetime provisions. In other words, the what if I'm incapacitated? What if I'm disabled? There are obviously nothing like that in a will, because a will doesn't start happening until you die. But a revocable living trust starts happening today. But the other thing you need to understand is all people don't need revocable living trust, and all assets can't go into revocable living trust, such as your retirement accounts and your IRAs. And then there's the question of, do you want one revocable living trust for the two of y'all, or do you want separate ones? Really, you need to meet with a financial planner who can go over your assets. He's got to see everything. The attorney doesn't look at your assets. You need to understand that. when you meet with the attorney, you won't bring him copies of all your bank accounts and copies of your brokerage funds and all of that. But when you meet with the financial planner, yes, he wants to see everything that you own so he can then get a picture and tell you whether he thinks it's worthwhile for you to pay the additional cost to have a revocable living trust produced.
Now, we've moved 19 times all over the country, we never know if we're going to move again.
That's another reason that many people like revocable living trust. That's a very good reason that people choose revocable living trust, is because the probate process at death, if you die tomorrow and you own things in different states, very often you've got to go through probate in each of those states if you own it in, outright. But if you own it in revocable living trust, you don't.
I see.
You see, each one of these issues is a question that really needs to be outlined much more in detail in front of a financial planner.
Sure.
Does that help you at all to get started?
That's great.
Some attorneys are excellent estate attorneys, and I know some really top estate planning attorneys. Others say they're estate attorneys, but they've got a little software package that you push a button and it prints out a will and fill in and makes them look like, but they really are not estate attorneys.
Hmm.
And the financial planner can help you evaluate the competency of an attorney.
There's one brochure that I have that I'd be happy to send to you about estate planning. And if you'd like to call the office in Raleigh, it's 872-7000. That's USA 7000. I'll be happy to mail it to you.
Okay. Well,
okay.
That sounds just absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling.
Bye.
Goodbye now.
Well, Linda, what's new in the world of investment planning?
Well, Doug, a lot of people that have called in, you know, listeners that have called in at the office, have questions about asset allocation. And I think I may have said earlier that a lot of these people have done a wonderful job of accumulating, but now they're concerned about, do I have it in the right vehicle? And I'm not making enough income off of my CDs. Or I had one gentleman, he had, $280,000 in CDs coming due, but he needed more income to pay for nursing home costs for his spouse.
Wow.
So anyway, you know, that was one of his major questions. What can I do to increase the income? Because the expense of paying for the nursing home isn't going to go away.
The question you're asking is the one of asset allocation. And an asset allocation is a very confused issue. Asset allocation, however, in my opinion, is the most important issue in investment planning. And if a person does not have an asset allocation model that they are following, if they do not have an asset allocation philosophy, or if they do not have a planner who has an asset allocation philosophy and model they're following, then they've got real problems. I guess the big question that I always ask people when I look at their portfolio, say, well, what are you trying to achieve? And they say, well, I'm very conservative and so forth. And I look, and it reminds me of a person that's trying to be lukewarm by keeping one foot in a bucket of ice water and one foot in a bucket of boiling water, trying to be, you know, lukewarm. They have no idea of what they're doing. So let's start at the basics, and let's go over the three methods of asset allocation that are practiced out there today. But first, why don't you give our listeners the numbers that they can call during the week to speak to you, and we can go over this more in depth with their personal situation.
The numbers to call during the week at the office are area code 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. And if, after listening to the show, if there's some question that's been on your mind that you need an answer about, I'll be happy to do what I can to help you, and just call the office.
All right. Three methods are practiced today. First method is the single investment, safest investment method. And this is the philosophy that says, let's find the safest investment that we can, the safest type of investment, and put all of our money in it, such as CDs, or such as municipal bonds, such as treasuries, such as guaranteed annuities.
Okay.
That's the single investment safest method type.
So looking at the single investment safest type.
That's the first method that's practiced. I do not like this method.
Why not? Putting all your eggs in one basket?
Well, and that's good, Lynn. But the reason I don't is I don't know what's the safest investment until it's gone wrong. I can tell you a horror story of every one of those safest investments. Everything looks safe when you go into it, but don't know until it's failed what was wrong.
Right.
The second method is the one of diversification. Diversification using a weighting, that's W-E-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, giving different weight. The diversification method using the weighting of risk, putting more money in the so-called low-risk investments and less money in the high-risk investments, trying to weight your risk. I do not like this method, even though it's a method of diversification by not putting all your eggs in any one basket. I don't like this method either.
Why don't you like it?
Because, again, we're trying to allocate what is high-risk and what is low-risk. And, again, I don't know until something goes wrong. So the things we put the most money into might have been the exact high-risk ones, and the ones we put the least money into might have been the low-risk, and we might turn out all wrong. The third method is a diversification method also. And this is the uniform unit size method of diversification. And that's the method I like. And in this method here, we give equal weight of risk to each investment and we set a unit size. For example, you mentioned a $200,000 portfolio. Right away, my mind thinks $200,000, $20,000 unit size.
10 of them, right?
10 investments, $20,000 each, and that will spread the risk equally. We won't try and guess which one is going to do better, which is going to be worse.
So what you're doing, again, is spreading your risk.
But by picking a uniform unit size. Now, the next thing I want is pools. I prefer not 10 individual investments. I would prefer 10 pools of investments. So let's say we pick a $20,000 unit size, and now we put $20,000 in this pool, maybe a mutual fund of 100 different stocks, and then $20,000 in this government bond fund. That's a pool of maybe 100 different government bonds, and $20,000 in this pool of corporate bonds, and that's a pool of maybe 100 corporate bonds. We are actually spreading our risk now by using the uniform unit size method of asset allocation and picking pooled investments. We are spreading our risk not over 10, but over hundreds of investments, and we're really spreading our money over 10 different managers. And this is the method that I prefer, uniform unit size method of asset allocation. And then also, I like to go ahead and work then with a debt-to-equity ratio of managers. For older clients, we would have more debt type of pools. Debts are bonds, bond funds, government bond funds, corporate bond funds, and so forth. Using these three features in that third method of asset allocation is the safest way I know to protect your money.
So get your situation analyzed, work with a financial planner. If you have any other questions, do give us a call at the office. The number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. All right, let's take Mary's call.
Mary, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
If you have had different employers and you have money that you can get in a lump sum from your pension plan and
right.
put in your 401k, can you just put that directly in there without any tax ramifications? How does that work?
How old are you, Mary?
50.
All right. How much is in the pension plan of the previous employer?
It's about $50-some thousand.
It was fully funded by the employer?
Correct.
All right. So you're 100% vested. It's your money?
Right.
In the old plan?
Right.
If the 401k lets you, you can roll it from the old pension into your present 401k. The IRS lets you.
All right.
However, I don't let you. I think that's a stupid thing to do.
Okay.
Right? So let me tell you what I think you should do.
Okay.
Number one, you should take it away from the old employer. Number two, do not put it into the new employer. What you want to do, in my opinion, is you want to set up an IRA rollover account and roll it from the old pension into an IRA rollover account.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will give you more flexibility, more control, less constraints, and more investment selections. You can go into basically any in mutual funds you want in the United States and many, many partnerships. You've got lots of choices where if you just go straight into your present 401k plan, you've only got the choices they've got.
You're limited.
You see what I mean?
The choices that they offer. Uh-huh.
Furthermore, you can't access it later on if you need to get to it for an emergency.
I see. Okay.
What's the size of the rest of your investment portfolio, Mary?
About $250,000.
And is that in personal money?
Personal.
All right. If you've got 250 over there, then you might pick two or three different funds once you roll this to an IRA, and maybe pick maybe three 15,000s or two 25s for this money to be rolled into.
Okay.
And it should be part of an overall asset allocation model. The overall asset allocation model should encompass both the 250 and this 50, so you've got a balance between debt funds and equity funds, balanced funds, growth and income funds, and so forth.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care, Mary, and if we can be of further assistance to you, just call us at the office at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Well, that's all the Money Matters we have time for today. So we want to thank all our listeners for joining us. And for any other questions you may have, call my office during the week and we'll set up an appointment to meet with you personally. That number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. And we'll be back next week on this same station at the same time. In the meantime, have a great week. And remember, your money matters because your financial future is at stake.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.